around authors and celebrities and sports people my entire life. And I have only occasionally come across a book that I have wanted to read twice in the same calendar year. And that's exactly the case here with my next guest, who wrote a book called The Whore of Akron. And before you think of before you start thinking that it's this horrendous book about how bad of a human being LeBron James is, it's a little bit about that, but it's a little bit about something more. It's a little bit about growing up as a sports fan your entire life. It's a little bit about being a man who's going through health issues. It's a little bit about your family. It is literally one of the three greatest sports books I have ever read, and it now goes to paperback, and we are very happy to have with us on the Horace Nissan Fox 1340 phone lines the author of The Whore of Akron, Scott Rapp. Scott, good morning. Welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you so much for the kind words. Much appreciated.
And much deserved, I believe, as well. It's one of those books where when I have an author on the first time, you know, I go through and I read as much as I can, and I get a sense of the book, and I get a sense of the passion of the writer, and it's great stuff. And then you have a chance to sit down and you go through it again. And literally, it's a two-night read that just it kept you going every step of the way. And one of the fascinating features of the book, and maybe it's a little bit of a personal, you know, because we do share some similar heritage. And growing up in a family that, you know, is of a certain religious perspective and what have you, I was able to you know, draw some of my own personal experiences from some of yours. Someone who's going through the health issues that I'm currently going through, going to a gym, never thought I'd do that. Stop smoking 100 days ago today.
Yes.
All the things that you talk about are things that any sports fan, especially one who grew up in Cleveland in that type of environment, can relate to.
I think so. I honestly believe that. I did not want to write, first of all, I didn't want to write a 300-page, you know, tweet of hate at LeBron James. Even I wouldn't be interested in reading that. It's also fascinating to me what turned me into the insane kind of Cleveland fan that I became at a very early age. I had never really looked at that, and my feelings for LeBron, of course, weren't always negative, to say the least. When he was a Cavalier, you know, he might have been a jerk, but he was our jerk. He was my jerk. He was our guy. And part of it, you know, just I wanted to figure out the answer to when people said, how could you possibly have this much venom toward a young athlete you don't even know? How could you wish injury on a fine young athlete? And I think those were legitimate questions. I tried to answer them, and I tried to have fun with it, partly because what can you do but laugh when you're a Cleveland sports fan? Or when you're an aging, you know, when you're getting older as a man and you still find yourself clinging to the belief that it makes a difference in your life, whether a team wins or loses or a player stays or leaves. That's a form of insanity. I really wanted to explore a little bit.
And it is a form of insanity, and I go through this a little bit. My college is the University of Southern California, and so recent years, I have had to come to terms with the fact that some of the people that represented my university were lying criminal thieves. And I don't like that, you know? And so I've reacted negatively to it. I will admit, I really loathe everything about Reggie Bush. I want nothing to do with that man, and quite frankly, I wish he had never come to the college in the first place. I have the same feelings for Pete Carroll. I wish he had never come to USC. Despite all the accolades, despite all the championships, all the Rose Bowls, all they did was wreck that program. And so my hatred for them now will follow them no matter where they go. Reggie Bush to Miami, Pete Carroll to Seattle. I want nothing to do with them.
It's an interesting culture, because I hate to use the term political correctness. It doesn't have any meaning anymore. But the truth of the matter is, I think one of the reasons that guys, in general guys, pour their heart and soul into sports and are swept away by the kind of passion you're describing and that I feel, is because there's not too many areas of life where we can really experience that kind of catharsis of just wild, total passion for something. You know, it seems silly to someone who doesn't get it, but all over the world, whether it's, you know, soccer, you know, NFL, whatever it is, the Trojans of USC, we find ourselves, these things become huge parts of who we are and how we identify ourselves in the world. And whether you say it's crazy or not, it's there. To ignore it would be insane.
Scott Rapp, author of The Whore of Akron, joining us here on Fox AM 1340. Scott, talk about this book going to paperback and what that means to you.
Well, I'm really happy that you know, the book while it was never a runaway bestseller, is popular enough that HarperCollins felt, you know, that when the playoffs, you know, roll around, that it's a good opportunity to get people at least acquainted with it. Part of the problem with the book, and I'm very open in the book about disrespecting ESPN. I mean, I have friends who work at ESPN. They're the worldwide leader, perhaps the most powerful entity in sports. But because I was pretty hard on LeBron and pretty hard on ESPN, ESPN has treated this book as if it was never published to begin with. And that's been difficult only because they reach so many people, and because I guess in a way, it reinforces my belief that they long ago ceased practicing credible journalism, and that LeBron James and ESPN basically work, you know, for the same boss.
And we're back. It's hour number two. It's First Sports in the Morning on Fox, AM 1340. Steve Bortstein back here inside the mainstream at Morgan Studios, high atop curbside downtown Farmington. It is my final show before I take about a week and a half of vacation, but we have got a ton to do this morning, and we are very happy to have you with us here on a warm Friday. It's going to turn even warmer this afternoon, but sit back. We got a great couple of hours still coming up on Fox 1340. And joining us right now on the Horace Nissan Fox 1340 phone lines is a very special guest. She is the daughter of Jerry Kramer. Jerry Kramer, one of arguably the greatest offensive linemen in the history of the National Football League. Yet, shockingly, Jerry Kramer finds himself outside of the halls of the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And joining us right now to talk about that and much more is his daughter, Alicia Kramer, who joins us this morning. Alicia, thanks for being with us.
Hi, Steve. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it's our pleasure. And it was funny, when I announced that this guest was coming on and that this was the topic, so many people called in and texted in and talked to me personally about their recollections of Jerry Kramer, their recollections of wanting to be like Jerry Kramer when they were in high school football, when they were in college football. And it was always about the Ice Bowl, and it was always about the pulling guard, the Packers sweep. And obviously, you grew up around that. What was that like being a part of your father's career?
Well, you know, I actually wasn't around when Dad played. I was actually a negative number, but you know, I got to see footage and visit with his teammates, and like you said, visit with fans and people that remembered. So I feel like I've been there. I feel like I saw that. I feel like I was a part of it, and it's been a large part of my life growing up.
And obviously you've heard and you've seen all the highlights. Were you surprised as you got older? Were you surprised to find out that he wasn't in the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
I was. We've done this 10 times. Dad's been nominated 10 times. And so this has kind of been our life story growing up, this back and forth between the Pro Football Hall of Fame and stuff. And so this, you know, what was most surprising is when people would announce him as a Hall of Famer at golf tournaments or at speaking engagements. And that was what was really frustrating and what prompted a lot of this.
Why has it been that Jerry Kramer is not in the Hall of Fame? What are your theories, and what is some of the speculation about why he's not yet in the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
Well, there's a couple of things going around. One of the most common ones I hear is that when the Hall of Fame first started, there were a lot of Packers, a lot of Steelers and Bears going into the Hall of Fame. And Dad was a star among stars. I mean, he had Bart Starr and Forrest Gregg and Jim Taylor and Paul Hornung and, you know, just on down the line, Willie Davis. And he was, you know, a guard, which was not the most glamorous position. And he was a star among stars, and that he was going to be put in, but, you know, they wanted to include other teams during that time. They were picking, there was a lot of different great guys during that era, and they just wanted to start including different members from different teams. And as the years wore on, you know, voting members passed on, they left or did other things, and they saw that Jerry was left out, Dad was left out, and so, you know, it just kind of got to be where they thought, well, maybe he didn't belong. But I think it was that he did belong, but that other things came along, and he kind of got put aside, And that's what I'm hoping to recreate, these memories, this time frame, this era, his playing career, and let people know. And when I share that with people, they question why he's not in the Hall of Fame. Just right. like, and that's the biggest thing I run into, is the second biggest thing, is people already think that Dad is in the Hall of Fame.
We're talking to Alicia. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No. I'm sorry. Finish your thought.
No, it was just, that's why I'm trying to refresh everybody's memory and get their support.
And we're talking to Alicia Kramer. She is the daughter of Jerry Kramer here on Fox AM 1340. As we are endeavoring the purpose here of getting Jerry Kramer into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And you mentioned how people think he's already in, and he's even announced at golf tournaments and what have you, at events, as being a Pro Football Hall of Famer. How is he handling not being in the Hall of Fame? When that comes up and when it's discussed privately, how does he handle not being a member of the Hall of Fame?
Well, you know, Dad used to correct people. He used to, you know, go into great people. And then people would ask, well, why aren't you in the Hall of Fame? And, I mean, he even had a conversation with Roger Goodell. Roger Goodell asked him, well, Jerry, are you going to Canton Celebration this year? Well, no, Roger, I'm not in the Hall of Fame. You're not in the Hall of Fame? And so it goes into that long spiel, and then Dad just kind of quit talking about it. He just kind of let it go. And, you know, Dad's a very modest person, and he would never go around championing himself. And that's why I'm doing it. That's why I've taken this on. He was not happy that I did this, you know, at first. But the support that he's getting, especially from guys that he played against and with 45 years ago, are coming back and speaking on his behalf, has really put a skip in my old man's step.
Joining us right now, in regards to the Penn State sex abuse case, one of the biggest scandals in the history of college sports, a complete shock to fans, boosters, students, teachers, administrators alike at Penn State University, warning signs ignored for years, according to a new book called Game Over, Jerry Sandusky, Penn State and the Culture of Silence by Bill Mushi and Bob Dvorak. Bill Mushi joining us this morning on the Horace Nissan Fox 1340 phone lines. Bill, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
I appreciate you spending some time with us, and talk about how you got involved in this project, first off.
Well, I've been an investigative reporter in Pennsylvania for 30 years, and when this thing erupted, I had spent, over the years, I had learned that Penn State was a closed society. They didn't want to ever reveal documents. They didn't fall under the state's Right to Know Act. They tried to keep everything secret. It's a little insular society. So when I saw this happen, I said, this case is a byproduct of that. So we got together and decided to write a book about it.
Growing up on the East Coast, it's where Penn State is if you live in that part of the country. But if you don't live in that part of the country, you don't really know, you don't really understand the area around Penn State University. It is literally like an island among itself within the state of Pennsylvania.
It's like it's got mountains cordoning it off on both sides. It's got 200 miles from Philadelphia. It's 200 miles from Pittsburgh. And there's really nothing in between. And that's a good attribute in a lot of respects, but in this situation, over the years, it has grown to become very closed and insular, and they don't like outsiders in. And a lot of good things happen about that, but you know, this situation is not good for anybody up there.
We're talking to Bill Mushi, a co-author of a brand new book entitled Game Over regarding the Penn State scandal. Bill, let's talk about the what Joe Paterno knew. And in reading the book, it's very obvious. He knew, he had to know, he couldn't have not known. When you look at any college sports scandal, whether it's illegal benefits to players or something as heinous and horrifying as this allegedly is, he had to have known, and it's very well documented in the book, that not only did he know, he was told about it frequently, and he knew he had to know everything that was going on.
Well, he testified in a grand jury that he said he did not know about the 98 event between Sandusky and a kid in a shower, even though it generated a 95-page police report and went up through the ranks. But in 2002, when Mike McQuarrie, the graduate assistant who became an assistant coach, reported it to him, he most emphatically knew. He basically reported it to a guy he appointed as athletic director and then didn't follow up much at all. In fact, Joe Paterno in his grand jury testimony said, I wish I would have done more.
We're talking to Bill Mushi here on Fox AM 1340. As it relates to Jerry Sandusky, who is currently under house arrest, awaiting his trial, scheduled to begin sometime later this summer. Talk about, you know, the cover. I mean, obviously, this was a guy who had this incredible secret life, and he did it under the guise of this program, this charitable foundation that he had founded.
Well, if you look at the whole scenario around Jerry Sandusky, and, you know, he is only accused right now, but you take an iconic football coach who was at least second banana to Joe Paterno. He's been there for 30 years and went to school there and played there and coached there. Then he sets up this foundation, the Second Mile Foundation, which grows to a point where he's considered like the Mother Teresa of Central Pennsylvania. And then it turns out that, according to the government, he was a wolf in sheep's clothing. And it is such a dramatic contrast that it'll take many, many years for people to swallow that.